don't you come back.
Oh, now, baby, please.
This is a Taylor Report. The part I liked was Hit the Road, Jack. We'd been talking about General Motors. And we are very fortunate to have on the line Professor Harry Glasspiegel, who's written a very important book. He was in the studio about talking about it, Capitalism, a Crime Story. Are you there, Harry?
I am indeed.
Well, it's really a pleasure to talk to you, particularly now. Capitalism, a Crime Story seems to be an applicable title to people of Canada, Ontario, Oshawa, trying to understand how a company can make a decision, quite an arbitrary one from the point of view of the masses, I would say. Why can't the masses make an arbitrary decision back, telling them, hey, look, we don't go along with this?
Well, they can, of course, if they want to, but it's making them believe that they can, that it's so difficult. We live in a society where we pretend to be a liberal democracy, and which means that we're all individuals and sovereign, and we can choose and think and act as we like. Mm-hmm. But all that liberal democracy in our society is subjugated to capitalism's agenda. And mm-hmm. that, in fact, means that the democracy stops working and liberalism stops being a principle when capitalists have a project that they want to pursue. And that's, of course, what General Motors did. General Motors just thought, well, gee, we've been getting all this money from Canada and the U.S. for that matter, and the governments have been handing out money, and we can keep it now and go elsewhere and make even more money with that money that we got out of them. And they're capitalists, so we pretend that that's okay. Yeah. We stand around and wring our hands and say, how could this happen? But it happens again and again and again and again.
Mm-hmm. We tend to talk about their decisions as if it's the weather. well, it's raining,
winter.
You know.
Yeah, it's natural, right? Like winter in Canada.
Yeah,
and it is sort of natural in capitalism, of course, that a selfish, greedy, rich person will do everything to remain rich and be greedy and selfish. And so it's natural in that sense. It is anti-democratic, it's anti-social, it's irresponsible, and it hurts people. And we do it literally. It is such a sad story. That I think the saddest thing that comes out of the Oshawa story so far is that the response has been so weak.
Mm-hmm.
Workers, unions, politicians who claim to support them all stand around saying, this is lamentable. Isn't it sad? We will retrain some workers. We'll make Oshawa a new city and all these things. But no one says, let's get the money back from the thieves, which is what they should be saying.
Oh, I'm really glad you say that. I was just speaking to Sid Ryan. We were talking about that. So much of it was given, and it was not repaid.
No.
So why couldn't we do what we like to do with the Saudis or Russians and say, well, we're going to freeze your... We're going to freeze your assets, pardon me.
Both, I hope.
Yeah.
yes, it's true. We could freeze them. And it's a good example that you and Sid are using, the Iranians or the Venezuelans. And notice what's interesting about that. We're perfectly willing to freeze capitalist assets if they're foreign capitalists who are hurting foreigners, not Canadians. Mm-hmm. And this happens to suit our local politics for special reasons for the moment, and then we're willing to do it. Mm-hmm. However, when it comes to our own people who are left unprotected by activities which are not alleged, as we do with the Iranians and the Venezuelans or the Russians, we just allege events. Here we know what happened, and yet we do nothing. It is a remarkable, remarkable sort of hypocrisy that pervades everything. And it can only be attributed to the fact that capitalism has sort of overwhelmed the minds and hearts of people so that we feel we can do nothing.
Yeah, they've really, this probably, I guess, mentally in history, that's always the biggest barrier, right, is thinking that something else is possible.
Yes, yes.
I mean, maybe Howard Fast in his novel Spartacus, he said Spartacus' problem was that he couldn't think of a different system.
Yeah, but, you know, it's a very strange thing. People always say that, but We do know there are other systems. Historically, there have been many other systems. And there are many people always saying, yes, look, we want to try something else. We've already tried many forms of communal ownership and socialism and democratic socialism. And some work, some don't work so well. But the point is that we're not in a position that we have to invent a blueprint. Mm-hmm. There's a famous anarchist called David Graeber who makes this point. He says, listen, during the Renaissance period in Florence, nobody thought that eventually this would develop into capitalism. They didn't have a blueprint. They didn't know there was going to be a stock exchange and that people were going to buy commodities and exploit workers. They had no idea that this would be the natural development. We don't have to provide a precise blueprint. What we can say is what kind of a world we would like to live in. And the world I would like to live in is one where people participate in decision-making that affects them directly, and therefore they can make decisions that suit the overall general good. What mm-hmm. happened in Oshawa is one set of actors simply said, screw you, and we let them do that.
Yeah, what galls me, or at least always comes to mind, in your book, by the way, and this is Harry Glasswick, and the book is Capitalism, a Crime Story. Part of the crime is the secrecy, that which is sacrosanct. It's like, I wonder what they're thinking in there.
Yes.
We hope that they're going to do this. We've been talking to them. And you say, could I meet one of these people? Could you give me a name, a phone number, an email account? No, I mean, it's from this dark chamber, like from the Wizard of Oz, comes a message. And everybody says, okay, now we're going to work from there. Why do we have to work from there? Why don't we say, we're coming in there. We're going to share the room with you.
No. You make the point very well, I think. It's a very we hide now, these in modern capitalist days, the capitalists hide behind corporations. So we pretend that there is some ethereal being out there which does things, as you say, very much like organize the weather. Mm-hmm. And we have no idea what this is. And for instance, Oshawa is a good example for another reason. In 2016, they came, General Motors Canada came to the government and said, listen, Oshawa is now getting to be an old plant. If you want to be viable and modern and keep us employing people here in Oshawa, please give us some more money. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, we'll just have to close. So we gave them some more money, of course. Yes. We always do. And then they closed up 2 years later. Now, notice, I do not believe that on a Saturday night, just before Monday, when they made the announcement, a couple of people at General Motors sat down and said, we'll close down on Monday. No, that plan was in the working about 18 months at least. That is just immediately after they got the money. They've always been planning.
Yeah. Did the check arrive? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. Tell him there's going to be a layoff.
So what people have to think about is that there are real people out there making real money out of decisions they make privately which affect the public good. And that is just wrong. That is just anti-democratic, as anti-community, as anti-social as it can be.
Yeah. And by the way, again, as Harry Glasswick, Capitalism, a Crime Story, there is some aspect to this which could be called, if it was looked at forensically, if I know what I mean by the word, criminal.
Yes. Well,
I mean, a lot of people got lied to, didn't they? I mean, wasn't there a little bit of falsehood going on here?
Yeah. Now, of course, lying is not a crime because we live in a world of advertising. And
we do worship billboards. I mean, I know that. Yeah. I salute when I go by.
Yeah, exactly. And but what it is, it's probably technically not a crime, but what they do, what a capitalist actually does, and it doesn't have to be...
Well, it is immoral. Okay.
It's immoral, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's immoral, and it's wrong as well in a very deep way. But what they actually do is they say we live by a rule that has been created on our behalf, namely that property is sacrosanct. It is the Holy Grail. And those who have property cannot be asked to invest it or keep it invested because it's theirs. Mm-hmm. And once they got that rule in place, and we believe in that in this society, that's a terrible mistake we're making. We believe in that. Once they have that rule, they simply say to us, and sometimes they just wink at us, they don't even have to say it, listen, mm-hmm. unless you give me what I want, I'm taking my wealth and you'll starve. Mm-hmm. And as long as we allow them to say that, right? We are going to lose every struggle we have. Yes. That's why it's imperative in this struggle, in this particular struggle, to use Oshawa as an opportunity to say, no, we've got to look at that rule again. You took advantage of us.
Right.
You blackmailed us. You you got money by false pretenses. You promised us things. You've dishonored the promises. We're going to take the money back, and we're going to keep your assets and make them into a plan for public transport.
Yes. Well, exactly. And that business, the moment they reached that point where they put the gun to the head, that's when everything should stop.
Exactly.
There should be a full stop and say, yes. Well, guess what? We're all humans here, and there will be mutual respect, and you will not threaten me.
Yes.
And we are in the tens of thousands, and we notice you guys aren't that – there are not that many of you.
In fact, what we notice is that you don't show up. You hide yourself.
You don't produce anything. We notice that.
For instance, just to deepen that a bit with a bit of evidence – one of the things that happened, of course, on the stock exchange, as soon as General Motors said it was going to close down four plants in North America, its shares went up 4.8%. That is, rich people saw an opportunity to make money out of the misery of the workers. They took it, and we say nothing about that. That is a scandalous way to run a society, and yet we did that. Or alternatively, here's another one. One of the things that after, you know, General Motors was bailed out like all the banks in 2009. And at that point, Obama said to General Motors, well, you can go into bankruptcy administration and we'll give you $50 billion to help you get back on your feet again. But everybody has to put in a bit. And by everybody, he meant workers. So the workers had to make concessions in order to keep General Motors alive.
Yes.
So they made concessions on their health and safety plan, on their health plans, they made concessions on their pension plans, and they agreed to two-tier bargaining so that new employees are going to get much worse deals than previous employees used to get from General Motors.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't extract any such promises from the banks he bailed out.
That was begging money, right? Here,
yes.
We've passed the hat around, sir,
yeah.
And we've got this money to give to you.
Right.
Please keep – that's our part.
And I think the interesting –
oh, you poor peasants.
And I think the interesting thing, Sat, from your first question, Phil, the interesting thing is that for a few minutes there, the federal government in the United States and the federal government in Canada, the Ontario government in Canada, actually had large shareholdings in this company, and it was actually a public corporation while it was in peril.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a chance to control it.
Uh-huh.
We had a chance to say we can look after workers, we can look after consumers, we can look after the environment. We didn't do that. We sold the shares as soon as General Motors had 15 quarters of profit making.
Guaranteed money.
Guaranteed. And then we sold the shares back. The Obama administration saw them back at a $10 billion loss. That is, the taxpayers paid $10 billion to keep General Motors profitable. and so when you look at all that...
Well, this is a revelation. I'm now understanding why Obama and Bush and Michelle were also warm together at McCain's funeral.
Yes, and I read a piece just recently where Obama was speaking at the Baker Institute where he said to all the people on Wall Street that they should be grateful to him because he lined their pockets so well.
Yes.
And this is a good example of it.
Yeah, what a story. But this is, we're speaking then to Harry Glasspiegel, and he's written a wonderful book, Capitalism, A Crime Story, and a previous book, Class Privilege, which seems to be also very pertinent. Harry, I know you, of course, lived in France, and you narrowly escaped with your life from the Nazis.
Yes,
a while ago. and by the way, from people who were not from Paris, you were hidden as a child by, my understanding, farmers. And we have some excitement in Paris. And I understand that a lot of these, this is not Parisians. A big percentage of just ordinary Frenchmen from other communities are the major power here.
What do you make of
what's going on there?
Well, I must admit I'm relying on newspapers and television reports, so I'm not as familiar with what's going on as I should be. But But what I see, and to the best that I can see, it is a movement which comes from all over the countryside, mainly from outside Paris. It's people who are angry about an immediate event, which is the putting up of gas prices, which of course affects their daily lives. But more importantly, we're just fed up by the fact that they're being run by a very narrow bourgeois elite who are exercising austerity measures which make their life a true misery. And not being sort of party-led. They seem to be outside the mainstream. They're just coming, and the way they identify themselves by putting on these yellow vests,
yes,
and the yellow jackets, I think they call them, and yes, that very fact that they identify themselves in that way makes it a very, very, very grassroots, populist feeling movement, which is clearly, and to go back to one of the issues you put about having a blueprint, people feel there must be something better. And I think that's how I see the movement. This is a start of what I hope will be a continuing movement of people saying, there's got to be something better.
Yeah, when you say they have, and they come from a country that has said that a few times before.
Yes, and with some successes.
they tend to mean it.
Yes.
I'm seeing wonderful slogans from them and odd comments. Somebody, apparently they had signs saying, France is not a startup company.
That is great. I was in France a few years ago when the beginning of these strikes began because labor rights were being attacked by Macron, who was then not the president, but he was the executive minister responsible for labor affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And he imposed very serious breaks on labor rights. And while he was doing so, I was walking in the street when there was a large demonstration by workers against the government, and they carried a placard. Now I don't know how many people in your audience speak French, but the placard was lovely. It said, "Je travaille, tu travailles, il travaille, nous travaillons, vous travaillez, il profite." So for those who don't speak French, I work, you work, he works, we all work, you plurally work, and they profit.
Yes. No, that's the kind of mood that we're seeing now. By the way,
exactly.
Today, people should not get the idea this is passing by. Macron, he was so proud of himself. He had his big Napoleonic boots on, or the Napoleon III. to get our Napoleons right,
yeah.
And he was going to stomp on labor. He told everybody, "I'm going to line these guys up." Well, somebody's getting lined up, all right. The students are out now, blocking the schools today.
Well, and just to add a bit to the of the anecdotal kind of evidence you have, Macron, you know, was very young when he was elected, but he'd come out of he'd become sort of a banking managerial type before he was elected. And he became very wealthy as that. So he's rewarding all his wealthy friends that he met when he was becoming wealthy himself,
yes,
as a bank manager. And that's fairly typical. And just to add to that, by the way, just as a side digression note, when the federal government in Canada also sold its shares in General Motors that it bought when it was helping General Motors out after the subprime mortgage debacles, they use Goldman Sachs to sell their shares. And so Goldman Sachs made a nice handy profit out of that, too.
Yeah, it's an amazing phenomenon. I'll just tell you, just because it's fun to share these things. There were interviews. I read L'Humanité. Of course, it had to be translated for me. Thank you, Google, or whoever it was that did that. But they said they were talking to people, and they say, we know what we want. We know what Macron is up to. They say the unions and the political parties all speak a jargon. We don't understand them.
Yes.
But we know that you cannot do this to us.
Yeah. And isn't that hopeful?
Yes.
Isn't that a hopeful thing?
I love that cutting through. They say the parties speak jargon to us.
Mm.
And we have real problems, and they get answered in jargon. I like the one they said, no privatization of ambulances. People are not parcels.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. But I do think that's a real problem because our unions, I noticed that The Unifor responded by saying how outrageous the Oshawa closing was and that he would speak with all the people involved. Now, speaking is not what we need. Because that is, again, the idea that we're going to go behind closed doors and we're going to do yet another deal and it'll last for
all the best things happen behind closed doors.
Closed doors, yes. Now, what we need is people, and this is old-time stuff, sitting in those plants and saying, look, we've contributed mightily to your wealth, way too much, right? We're going to keep some of it back, and we're going to run it.
Yes.
Now, and once we start saying that, and it's very simple, people understand it very easily, once we start saying that, we might see a change coming our way.
Yeah. Well, again, we're very glad to have been talking to you, Harry. It's the book is Capitalism, a Crime Story.
And, oh my God! You're a good publicist.
your timing was excellent. You may have seen this coming. You don't have to tell us.
I think it's an old problem, as you well know.
Somehow you knew. There's a famous sociologist wrote that book years in the mid 19th century. He said these things would happen, and they've stopped laughing.
Well, yes, his book is now very popular.
Yeah. Well, we will recommend it to everybody. And Capitalism, a Crime Story. Harry, thanks very, very much. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Speak to you soon, Phil. Bye-bye.
I'll get over. Bye-bye. And that's Harry Gillespie, as I said, author of Capitalism, a Crime Story. We have a little of French Revolutionary music, and then we will come back, and Phil and I will talk.